Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello. And welcome.
I think I always laugh after you say hello. Every episode is your turn. I'm always like,
is it because you find me so adorable?
Yeah, I think so.
Can't help it. Is it involuntary?
Yeah. Wouldn't say it was voluntary.
Which Come makes on. It involuntary.
Crack on.
Welcome to Gays on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I'm Ned.
And I'm Declan.
And in this episode, we will be talking about bottoms.
The top erasure is...
scandalous.
Yes.
Remember, there will be spoilers once we get to the headline feature, so as always, do proceed with caution. But before we get into it, I'm dying to know what you've been watching recently.
So I know you're going to talk about the new David Fincher that we watched together.
I asked about yours.
And no, I know, but because we are getting into the habit of recording a bit more regularly these days, I haven't really watched
word.
All that much, really, because the last time was, we had Chicken Run, which was Killers of the Flower Moon, which was only like... Last Tuesday we recorded, it came out last week. So, yeah.
And also, we've been watching loads of Leeds Film Festival films. So
yeah, been very
busy.
We're
not going to mention those because we're going to do an episode about it all.
Yeah, but there was a really good one yesterday that I was obsessed with.
Obsessed.
But, so, finished Loki Season 2, which I know you haven't even started yet.
I forgot about it.
Turns out, sounds like it's not just you that's forgot about it, because as well as the Marvels flopping this weekend, apparently Loki isn't being viewed very much at the minute either. But it was quite a confusing season. I found the plot quite hard to follow at times, but the way it ended was fantastic. The last episode was
how many episodes
brilliant.
Is it?
Six.
And how long are they?
Between 40 and 55 minutes.
So long.
But it was very, very good.
Yeah.
So I would recommend for anyone who is still an MCU fan, because there seems to be getting less and less out there. But it kind of brings some big ideas together, leaves you very much feels like a finale to a season, perhaps a finale to a character. Although probably not. But yes, very much enjoyed it. And if anyone hasn't given Loki Season 2 a go, I would recommend if you are, obviously if you're a Marvel fan, but also if you just kind of, like, there's the people that follow Marvel and will see and watch everything, which obviously I'm probably preaching to the...
Converted.
I was going to say the choir. Yeah.
Say either or.
But even if, like, you kind of enjoyed Loki as a character throughout kind of his adventures with Thor and then Avengers, I would probably go back and watch this, because I think it's quite accessible for Loki Season 1 and Loki Season 2. Mm. I'm also halfway through The Fall of the House of Usher, which I was hoping to watch before Halloween, but there's just so much bloody telly that there's no way I can watch it all.
Bloody, because it's Halloween.
Yeah, and I did want to watch it before Halloween, but I thought I'll watch it after. It's scary and it's dark outside. Yeah. We've got Storm Debbie with us now, blowing a gale.
Hiya, Debbie love.
Hello, love. That's our little Jessie Ware pun, because we went to see her in Manchester this past week.
Oh, that's why we've not seen any films. We've been so busy all weekend.
We're always busy.
Oh, I know.
I have seen The Marvels, but we're seeing it together and we're doing an episode on it, so... Keep stumbling
quiet.
There as well. But yeah, The Fall of the House of Usher is quite... so far, it's very good. No, I'm enjoying it. It's quite clever and well written. It jumps forwards and backwards. But I am really enjoying it. It's one of those Netflix shows that, annoyingly, for my sleep schedule, when you finish one episode, it always finishes on a bit of a cliffhanger. So I end up watching like at least the next 5 to 10 minutes of the next one because I'm like, I can't wait to see what happened.
That's silly.
But it's a really clever premise. So basically, the Ushers are this horrendously rich family, like billionaires family. Mm. It's a bit kind of, they've profited massively off kind of a bit like Oxycontin. It's a bit similar to that where this is fictional. Like
the opioid crisis.
Yeah, so they've profited off this painkiller and now there's a trial. And basically there's a mole within the Ushers who was talked to the feds.
Right.
So the dad puts a 50 million bounty out to the family and says, uncover who it
Find
is.
Them all.
But it kind of tears them all apart and then one by one, things happen to his children.
Okay. I don't think I'm going to watch it.
I mean, for you, Ned, who doesn't tend to watch a lot of telly, I probably would say...
Well, I've also seen the last episode.
What?
Yeah, your mum watched it while I was ironing the other day.
Was it good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, well, yeah. But there's so much other stuff. But there was that one last year that I didn't watch because it didn't really get good reviews. And again, I kind of missed it, a Mike Flanagan one. But obviously...
Oh, it was like a high school one,
yeah,
wasn't it?
And it didn't really get... And I thought, oh, I'm not that bothered. But I've loved all his... Actually, I mean, The Haunting of Hill House.
Hill House, Bly Manor and Midnight Mass were
and
all...
Midnight Mass was notch. Phenomenal. Yeah. Like, and Hill House was, but I really probably appreciated more kind of... The craft, the way he makes horror is really interesting.
Yeah.
But Hill House was a bit more... And when I use the word conventional, I don't mean it was conventional really at all, but it was a bit more of a straightforward horror. Whereas Midnight Mass, like... got under your skin. It made you feel weird and horrible and it was slow and unfurled itself and it was really cool. So I would still say Midnight Mass is my favourite of Mike Flanagan's Netflix shows. Then probably Hill House. And currently House of Usher is above Bly Manor. I didn't really like Bly Manor that much.
Well, Bly Manor was the first one I watched.
Oh, was it?
I did quite enjoy it.
And the other reason...
It's because the mum from Spy Kids is in it.
The mum from Spy Kids?
Can't remember her name.
The Spy Kids version with Antonio Banderas?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is. Yeah. Yes. And she's in them all, really, because it's like an anthology type thing.
Yeah.
But this is the last of the Netflix shows that he's doing before he now moves to Amazon, I want to say.
Is he?
And I think he's doing a film soon. Let me have a look.
Will it be horror?
He seems quite... And he was attached to one of the new DCU properties, like a Swamp Thing film that James Gunn was doing. Let me just... I still haven't seen Doctor Sleep that he did, which annoys me that I haven't seen that.
Oh, that was really good. I didn't realise that was him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing a... The Life of Chuck, a life-affirming genre-bending story based on Stephen King's novella. Don't know. It's Stephen King, so there's potential there. But yeah, I would, if you haven't seeked The Fall of the House of Usher out, and you're looking for quite
seeked.
An... Ad- seeked.
Sought.
Sought. Seeked.
Seeked.
If you haven't sought it out... Sort it out. If you haven't sought it out.
If you haven't sought it out.
And you're after a Netflix show that's quite addictive and you've maybe got a bit of a chilled weekend, which if you're our age and it's on the run up to Christmas, you probably don't have because our calendar is horrendous, but that's pulling back the curtains.
That's our fault.
But yeah, I would recommend it. Speaking of Netflix, David Fincher's new
The Killer
film is on it. What did you think of that?
I think I gave it 3 stars.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe 3.5. I don't know. I found it difficult to get to grips with the characters, but I really, really... I found it entertaining. Like, I really enjoyed how it was put together. And I thought Michael Fassbender was really, really, really good in it.
Yeah, I hope he gets more work off this, because he's been very... Yeah. He kind of got struck off Hollywood after a couple of misses.
Did he?
What was he in that didn't do very well? That video game adaptation. Oh, God, what was it? Like, he did so well in kind of Macbeth, Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he went on a bit of a hiatus, which I'm not sure if it was his own.
Yeah. But... I got an interaction on my Letterboxd review of this. Bill Hargreaves.
Oh, yes, he's one of our followers.
Oh, is he? Oh, shout out Bill Hargreaves.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think a little bit of editing to some of the earlier scenes could have allowed Tilda Swinton to be a bit more present in it, because she was way cool to bring in, and then she was only in there like 5 minutes.
Yeah, but I think that's a bit of a ballsy move to bring Tilda Swinton in and just...
For 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's partly why I found the characters a bit difficult to follow, because other than Fassbender, nobody was in it for more than about 5 minutes.
I think that's the point.
I know that's the point, but I found it difficult to follow.
I found this so interesting, because when we were watching it, Ned was like, I'm a bit lost here. Whereas
I didn't really
who gets lost watching films, yeah. And you were normally the one I turned to and go, explain this to me. But I was going to Ned, it's a really simple premise.
I know the premise is simple, but I didn't get who was who. That's the problem. I got the storyline. I just didn't get which person was doing which part of the story. I needed to watch it a couple more times to really get my head around it.
It was very stylized and... I mean, quite meticulous in, like...
To be honest, I think I could watch the opening sequence.
It was a bit tense, wasn't it?
I could watch that a few times and really enjoy it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, people in a learning how to make films.
Yeah.
Someone put this opening sequence on and said, that's how you build tension in a really invented and almost kind of muted way. Because there's not a lot going on.
No.
But it's very tense.
Yeah.
But yes, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I give it 4 star. But yes, I am glad to see Fassbender back as well. I think we'll see him
it's definitely one I would recommend.
Waititi's next goal wins about that. I want to say Tongan football team.
Oh, that one has been really
coming
fun.
Out for... about 4 years.
Feel like a...
He rapped on that. Went into pre-production of Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
Released it. It's been out for ages, and still this isn't out, but there's a lot to do with someone who... I think they had to reshoot quite a lot of the film.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I
look forward to that one.
Yes.
I think I would recommend people watch The Killers... The Killer, if they like a bit of a tense sort of thrillery type.
So my brother texted me about it. It was like, have you watched The Killer? And I was like, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. He said, yeah, so did me and Dad. And Mum got up after 20 minutes and went
to bed.
Wasn't
bothered.
So I do think it won't be for everyone, because it's quite... And I know Mum's not really... Like, Mum can't stand any of the John Wick films. She doesn't see the point in them.
It gave me a bit John Wick vibes.
It was a lot more grounded than that, though. Like,
well, obviously not fantasy.
John Wick doesn't feel real, does it? Like, every fucker's an assassin.
Yeah.
Whereas this felt like it could be.
John Wick isn't real. This was set, like, in real life.
Yeah.
Watch it if you like that kind of film. That is the only non-Lyft film I've watched since we last recorded, so I haven't got anything else to really say on that.
What's up? I'm just looking at the next thing we do. We'll have to try watch some stuff this week. Otherwise, we'll be repeating ourselves, or this sequence will be getting a hell of a lot shorter, especially on the run-up to Christmas.
Because we're going to see the Hunger Games prequel on Sunday, I do want to watch both of the last two, because I've never seen them before.
Mockingjay Part 1, Mockingjay Part 2.
Thank you.
Yeah. One, yeah. Two.
What is going on in the news? We've not recorded since, have we?
It's over.
Ah!
The actor's strike is over, and...
I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you already knew that, but we are so excited.
And what's just exciting straight away is I follow a few like film news accounts on Twitter.
Right.
And I've got notification like set up for when they tweet. Just so I
is it still called tweeting now? It's X.
Oh God, I'll never call it X.
No.
In fact, I'm close to coming off, but that's not relevant right now. And for ages, there's been hardly any news that's coming out. Well, right. We all know this. This segment has been a bit of a slog for a while.
Mm.
And straight away, within a few days, I was like, oh my God, there's news coming out. There was press release about castings. James Gunn said that Superman is still going to make its release date because all the other production team... Well, not until 2025, wrote it before the strike, and then obviously a bit of casting came out, but all the other production teams have been working away on the sets and everything.
So all that's left to do is to shoot it. Need to do.
Yeah. So all that kind of stuff. I'm sure that, and we will get to this, but the deal is pretty good. It lasts 3 years, but apparently it's normal that each contract only lasts a few years before they reassess things and go back.
Right.
The studios did put what they call the final something offer to them.
Best and final,
which they didn't accept because it basically said, we can scan your face to use forever.
It gave them death rights, didn't it?
Basically, without any monetary value, like your family wouldn't get it, your estate wouldn't get it, and they could use it forever. So there was a bit of forward. The main sticking point was basically AI in the end, which they went forwards and backwards on a bit, and now it is done. And I think the deal has now been ratified. So Hollywood is back. I'm sure a lot of studios are already, you know, I've seen that Stranger Things, the final season of Stranger Things, David Harbour's already flown out to start filming on that.
Yeah.
Deadpool 3's gone back into, like, everything is quite quickly going back into production. Mm. What's the one that had 2 days left of principal photography? Beetlejuice 2 only had 2 days left, which is so annoying that they've had, like, 100. I wanted to do one for Halloween this year, but we just didn't have time, and we did a couple of others, but I've never seen it. I know. All of a sudden...
Oh, no, that's Edward Scissorhands. I've never seen Beetlejuice either.
I can't remember.
I was thinking of Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder in Edward Scissorhands.
I do like that one, though. But straight away, obviously, Disney got in ahead and looking at what is in the can, what still needs doing, and a lot of movements happened. So it now looks like Deadpool 3 will be the only MCU film that comes out next year. It's been delayed from its May 3rd release date till the 26th of July. I think this is potentially a very good thing for Marvel to just have one next year and then almost like a bit of a break. Because Deadpool as well, whilst he is coming into the MCU, isn't necessarily, because he was part of Fox for so long, it doesn't necessarily feel like proper MCU either. So I feel like a bit of a breathing space might do Marvel quite well. So, although the year after is straight back to 4 films in the year.
Right.
I think we've got Captain America, Blade, something. But what's quite interesting is they obviously need just a couple more months, Deadpool, because, they've gone from beginning of May till late July, but Marvel have never not released a film the first weekend of May since Guardians 1. So for them to vacate that release date, which is normally a massive, like, beginning of the summer blockbuster season, is a bit wild. So I don't know if another studio might move it. See, I would move Apes forward.
Oh, I still haven't watched any of the newer Apes.
Because at the minute, 24th, which is Memorial Day in America, you've got Furiosa, which is the... Oh, God, help me. The Mad Max film.
Right.
You've got the Garfield movie and Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes all coming out on the same day.
Oh, we watched the trailer for Garfield.
We did. It was quite cute.
It was cute.
So I'd potentially move Apes. And I think it's technically the same studio as Disney because it's 20th Century, which is now Disney. So, yeah. Or Inside Out 2. Maybe that could kick off the summer season.
Yeah. Didn't 20th Century become Searchlight?
Searchlight's part of Disney.
Ah.
They all are. So, yeah. We'll see. But it's over. I'm sure the news is...
I think the actors are happy to be posting on Instagram.
Yes, they are. Again. Yeah, I've seen quite... I've just seen them posting behind the scenes of...
Yeah, of stuff.
Some of their projects that have come out during the strike, because it's weird to think they can't even post kind of behind the scenes pictures because it'll be classed as promoting the film.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully we're back in the swing of things, and Hollywood is back and SAG's happy. And
are they likely to bring any of the pushed back films forward again or no?
Are you thinking June 2?
Well, that was one of me. Yeah.
I don't think June will move because it's only March now.
Yeah, true. That'll fly by that.
Yeah. So I don't know.
All right.
But yeah.
Lovely.
It's over. I was still awake when I got the news and I nearly threw my phone. I think you were out that night, and the next morning I said to you, did you see the news? And even you knew, which, yeah. So, okay. Well, what a time we've had. And now it's time to cast our minds into the future and get excited for what's coming up in the world of film. It's time now for Trailer Trash or Treasure. And what have we got this time? Do you want me to introduce it? Do you want to?
Well, you asked me.
What?
What have we got this time?
I know, yeah.
Well, you... addressing
yeah, but not only I always pick, don't I? I would find it so rogue if you went to me. I've picked Trailer Trash or Treasure.
I have picked it once.
Have you?
There was an idea for a while we were going to alternate.
And totally ignore me on this segment because I gave Poor Things, I think, a trash and said it didn't look like my kind of thing. Mm. And we saw it at LIFF this week. And not to give much away, but it was fucking fantastic. So, yeah. But what have we got this time?
This time, it's not Poor Things.
No.
It's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So, link is in the show notes if you want to pause us now, watch along, and then come back and join the conversation. Do that. We'll see you after the sparkles. It doesn't give much away.
It's very much a teaser. In fact, I think it was a teaser trailer. Oh, okay.
Well, it teased me.
So the last one, Ghostbusters Afterlife, which was the new one.
Yeah. That was the one the set epitome, in like the house out in the sticks somewhere.
Is the epitome to me of a fine, three-star, one of those films, I don't think I gave it a second thought as soon as I left the screen.
I sometimes remember it, but I don't remember any of the details.
Yeah. I would say... that's another thing that we've done, which we should mention. So we went to see Empire podcast live recording Leeds Trinity. And obviously as part of their podcast, they do kind of movie news, and they did discuss this. And one thing I will agree with Helen O'Hara, shout out... and she said this trailer gets like straight into what's happening, and she hopes that there's more build up to actually what happens in the film. Yeah. So we basically see in this straight away, it's summer in New York, but this death chill comes, which is being scared to death, but you actually get frozen as well. You're not just frozen in fear, you are frozen. I actually think this looks I quite like the look of this.
I feel like the film is probably going to be like quite all right. I don't think that I'm expecting anything mind-blowing based on that trailer, and I'm concerned that the ice thing and the scared to death thing are just going to become a little bit confused. Like, pick a lane and do it really well. Why do you have to have both? I don't want the ice to be like a bit gimmicky.
Okay.
That's the feeling I got from this trailer.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. But I mean, I like the people involved. I like Paul Rudd. I like Carrie Coon. I like the younger cast, including Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things.
Yep.
Nice to see some of the originals, you know, Bill Murray.
I'm sure it's going to be like, it'll have a few laughs with a cast like that.
So also introduces Kumail Nanjiani, who I really like. I think he's very funny. He was in Eternals.
Yes, I like him.
He's been in some other bits.
I recognize his face.
So, and there's some other newbies in there. I mean, I'd like to see... Actually, sometimes I'm like, I wouldn't like... Because they're going to do another trailer, but I don't know if they'd almost give even more away. And I'm quite happy with that. So, yeah, I would probably say for me, it's a light treasure.
I think I might have to trash it. I'll probably see the film and I'll probably not have a bad time watching it, but this trailer...
I mean, we'll see it, won't we?
Yeah,
let's be honest.
This trailer for me really hasn't done it. So, sorry. Okay.
Well, its US release date is March the 29th. We might get it the same or they might move it in this country depending on when the school...
This
Easter,
country being the UK.
The UK, when the school Easter holidays are, because sometimes jiggery pokery happens with... release dates.
Hey, that's a turn of phrase you don't hear very often.
Although it does actually say UK still the 29th of March, but I have no idea when Easter is, so... But it's going up against a film that I'm very excited about, but I won't talk about that. Mickey 17.
Don't know that.
Bong Joon-ho's new film, which is a science fiction with Robert Pattinson, Mark Ruffalo and Toni Collette. So if those release date sticks, that'll be a good weekend.
Have we got a trailer for that yet?
At the cinema. Nope.
Oh.
So yeah. Yeah. Light treasure for me.
Cool.
And now it's time for this episode's, I should start saying, now we're doing it more and more. This episode's headline feature, bottoms. Isn't bottom a funny word? Bottom.
Yeah.
You really get your lips around it. coming up right after this quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Bottoms,
then.
Yeah, you do get your lips around that, actually, don't you?
Do you want to get straight into the synopsis before we dive in? Yeah.
What a film. Right. Best friends PJ and Josie are bottom of the high school pecking order.
Hence the name.
Bottoms.
Yeah.
To get noticed by their crushes, they initiate a self-defense club under the guise of the need for female solidarity at the school. In the time before a big football game, chaos ensues.
I like that. That's a good synopsis.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Three sentences long.
So I've been waiting for this film to come out for ages because it came out in the US months ago and I don't know why. Mm. I wasn't even sure we were going to get I knew it would release, but I was convinced it wasn't going to go on cinemas in this country, but it did, which is great.
Yeah.
Straight away, though, it's another film showcasing how cruel American high schools supposedly are. Because it's one of those kind of coming-of-age films, high school comedies, where you're like, is that what they're like in America?
Honestly, I don't even think I've ever asked my American friends.
No. Like, do they have all these groups and there's no intermingling and it's
like
just
actual
like,
cliques?
Yeah, it's like I know there was cliques in school that we went to, but not like, oh, they're the footballers, they're the hot yeah. girls, they're the this, they're the that. And I thought it was really cruel that these are like prefaced as like the ugly lesbians that nobody likes. Although it is quite funny, like nobody's bothered that you're gay. It's that you're gay and
ugly,
or like gay and
untalented.
Gay and untalented. It's like no, it's not the gay thing that's got you at the bottom of it. It's just that you're.
It's the gay and untalented.
Yeah. So Variety summed up what this film is using two other films. It's Fight Club meets Heathers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would agree. I haven't seen Heathers, like, the film. I've only seen it on
No,
stage,
I've seen the stage, and I'm like, well, I know what that means, and I know what Fight Club means. Yeah. Although I would like to revisit Fight Club, because I don't feel like I've watched it as an adult who's really into cinema.
I have an embarrassing admission.
You haven't seen Fight Club,
Never
have you?
Seen Fight Club.
That's it. Well, maybe we do it as a time capsule next year, maybe.
Maybe we should.
I really, really love the main characters, PJ and Josie.
Played, Me too.
Played by Rachel Sennett as PJ and Ayo, I'm going to butcher this.
Edebiri.
Who is in The Bear and is phenomenal in that. And to see her in this was amazing. And you know Rachel Sennett now, she's done a couple. She did the other film with the director, Emma Seligman, Shiva Baby, which
Shiva
I still
Baby,
want
yeah.
to see. And I know that the film is only like 70 minutes long, so I don't know what the hell's stopping me watching it just one night, but got a massive watch list.
Yeah.
But who out of those two did you prefer?
Not
to pit them against one another.
That's like asking a parent their favourite child.
No, but I really like them. But I look for me, Josie's sarcasm and like her, just
their whole dynamic, the two of them, their sense of humour, was so dry and really, really silly, really kind of close to the line. Just so funny. And what I loved about their like friendship is that they're like they're obviously the two lesbians in the year. It's totally platonic. They are like bros.
Yeah.
And it gave a really great performance.
And they've like resigned themselves that they're the losers and like they need to do something about it. But
everything about this film is so matter of fact. Like there's no like skirting around, there's no judging, it's just you're the ugly lesbians, you're the hot girls, you're the jocks. It was just really, really funny.
So PJ has got a crush on
Isabel. Brittany. PJ's got a crush on Brittany.
Yeah.
And Josie's got a crush on Isabel.
So the premise of how the Fight Club starts is also really quite funny in the sense that they go to like a fair.
It's like the pep rally fun fair.
Yeah.
Which gives me like Grease vibes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Isabel has got a crush on, no,
Isabel's boyfriend. Is like the head jock, I imagine the quarterback or something.
Played very funnily by Nicholas Galitzine, who is in our best performing episode, Red, White and Royal Blue.
He plays Prince, whatever his name is.
Henry. Yeah. I will Brexit your head off your...
That's so camp.
But the way they get into a bit of an altercate, so Isabel and Jeff get into a bit of a fighting match as a couple.
Yeah.
PJ and Josie are in the car and they're like, oh, get her to come in, like, yeah, you can hit on her, but we need to look after her, you know, solidarity to women, all that kind of thing. The way that Jeff falls to the ground when they hit his knees, and when I use the word
hit,
a flick would be stronger with the car. The way he falls to the ground and like fakes this really, really bad injury is hilarious.
It's as if his like both his kneecaps have been shattered.
And obviously with him being the
the job,
quarterback from the American football team. And all the teachers the next morning are even distraught that he's injured, because even the teachers are obsessed with the football team,
that
like everything about it.
So funny about it though, because this whole film is from the perspective of those two at the bottom rung of the ladder, and they are women. It, I think there's only one male character that gets any development, and all of the other men in this film are just idiots. But
just like vapid, aren't they? Like,
they're all doing stuff that like normal straight boys I remember them doing in high school.
Even though the teachers.
What?
Do you even mean like the male like the adults? Because I even say the adults were all idiots as well.
They were all just, they were just like flocking around stupid, nonsensical stuff. And it was so weird. It was like watching culty behavior from the outside, which I think is a really, really funny, but quite almost, I don't want to say accurate, because that's as if it's like real life, but like a fantasy version of real life, of being like able to see what hetero.
Well, the film
is
very much not just from like a feminist female gaze, pardon the pun,
female gaze,
but also kind of, I've lost my train of thought now.
A gay gaze.
But it's just very from their, how they see the world.
Yeah.
Whether or not that is how the world is, it's
that's
just how they
exactly
perceive
what I was
the world.
To get at.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really funny. Even
because, you know, like when people say, there's your version of the story, there's his version of the story, and then there's the truth. That's like, this is, it's very much.
This is
like
very
that.
Much their version of the story.
Yeah.
And oh my God, when they first go and talk to Isabel and Brittany pre this car accident.
Oh, there was really funny dialogue, but I can't
so,
remember it enough.
So funny. They were so awkward and just saying, they delivered their lines with such deadpan, like poker
What did
face.
Josie say? She says something really
remember,
just like novel.
Really, really funny.
This is a film, though, that like maybe not as soon as I walked out, I'd go watch again. But I think it's been a week now and I would happily go watch it again. Maybe not at the cinema, but I'll watch it at home.
Oh, I'll definitely stream it again for sure.
Yeah.
So Jeff, quarterback with the injured knees, is Isabel's boyfriend. Isabel is the crush of PJ.
No. Of Josie. Yeah.
God, the names. I'm going to get this wrong every single time I say it. And like even her, it doesn't indicate that she's going to get any like real character development particularly until quite late on.
My tummy's rumbling. I hope that microphone's not picking it up. Could you hear it?
Yeah. Sounded like the Cybermen were arriving.
Oh. Well, Doctor Who is back soon.
It is.
Anyway, what were we saying?
What was I saying?
Something
about
Jeff.
Oh, and then like, you don't really think much about it, and then suddenly Isabel's in the Fight Club, and you're like, ooh, this is going to get fun.
I will say, the way this film starts is not that, that is not how it develops. So it's almost like we're seeing it. So when they say they get away with what they supposedly did to Jeff and his weak knees, by saying they were practicing for a fight club, so then they do set this fight club up.
Oh,
now, I was expecting,
and the reason that they had to make up that lie is because instead of the truth being reported to anybody, they are suddenly reputed as having gone to, spent the summer at juvie,
which is funny,
killed somebody, and then beat the living shit out of the quarterback because he said something wrong or looked at them the wrong way or something, and that's why they end up in the head teacher's office, and he's just like, I know you've spent the summer in juvie, but what were you doing about this? And that's when the lie about practicing for the fight club came out, isn't it?
Yes, which that all sounds quite tame, and it probably is. Where this film then goes next is, I would say, so absurd, so over the top.
If I said the word bizarre.
Yeah. Way more violent than I expected. Like, it's almost like it no longer exists in the same reality that we're in.
And it is, and it's a weird type of violence as well. It's like comical, but it's not slapstick.
No, it's not at all. There's people dying. Well, we'll not get to the it. Very but end. Like, I knew that. I remember reading something that that they had to have stunt training for this film, and I thought, oh well, stunt training can be anything from just like stepping off a bit of a high ledge,
or how to fall over.
Yeah, like it could be really. When you see it, you're like, oh shit. That's why they needed it. Because when they are practicing, they beat the living shit out of one another.
Honestly.
And what I found really, like, they didn't, what I found really funny is, like, the next day when they're at school, they're all covered in cuts, bruises. But what's really funny about it is nobody says anything about them, the cuts and the bruises.
No, yeah.
It's like, it's, no one, nobody, it doesn't, so they don't register. It's like, so
it's
normal.
It's just like, it's just there, it exists, no point commenting on it because it's not an important line or whatever. That first Fight Club meeting is so, so funny. They're going on, like, so they are two of, I think, a trio of best friends, but, like, they're the closest two. Hazel, who's, like, the third.
Oh, she's really sweet.
Is, like, I feel like she's the one that gets shit on a bit by them, or has done throughout the years. Anyway, turns out, this Fight Club only gets sanctioned if it's got, like, members and if they've got a member of staff to...
Like, overseeing it.
Supervise, yeah. So, Hazel goes off and recruits loads of girls from throughout, like, the year group, I guess, to fill the Fight Club. And then PJ and Josie have to have a conversation with their teacher. And I think they kind of think that they're taking advantage of his sensitivity because he's going through a divorce or something.
He's not very, he's not the smartest.
He gives off the, like, brightest. He's a bit like,
are we on about Mr. G?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was hilarious in this film.
Not the brightest star in the sky. Not the sharpest tool in the shed. Was going to go for a third one then, but I can't.
He can be led.
Anymore.
So, like, his journey from being a outright feminist who supports the girls to when it all goes wrong for the girls absolutely hating women, writing an essay title on the board that says why all presidents have been men and why they should just stay that way or something. And it's like, right. And then he all then all and then also kind of flips back to feminism, but he's also going through this, as you said, journey of divorce. But he really kind of anchors the comedy in a good anchoring spot without throughout the film. Like where he's at with his journey is almost where the whole of the premise is.
He comes in, he speaks a few like home truths just when you need them because everything that's bizarre is going on and you need to remember that this film does have a point of view. Actually, it's not just stupid for stupid's sake.
No.
Which I think actually is yet another reason to really, really enjoy it. Because I think, to take a step out a little bit, traditionally there's been this kind of misconception that women can't do comedy as well as men, as there have been in many genres and many jobs and all of that. But if you look over the last sort of 20 years of films that are as ridiculous as this, that are kind of generally for male audiences, they're only funny if you're a stupid man. They're not really funny if you've got, like, if you're trying to find what the film means in many cases.
Mm.
Whereas this one is as stupid and bonkers and ridiculous, as funny, and has something important to say. And I just think, because it's made by women and it's succeeding in all of those, it makes it even better.
It's, to me, it's the perfect example of some women starting to come up through Hollywood that have actually got real kind of original stories to tell.
Yeah.
And yeah, you could do, like, yes, I've said, oh, it's Fight Club meets Heathers. It's... which are two classic films from the past. I've also wrote in my notes that it's quite predictable, but
You can tell.
You know where
it's
going.
But
there's
going to
be a fallout. Yeah. They're going to rekindle. But what I'm saying
is, it kind of tells you that that's where it's going.
Well,
I know,
but that's what I mean.
It's not trying to hide anything, is it?
But it's so much fun along the way.
Yeah.
And the originality. And this is what I always say. It's like when people say, "Oh, the superhero fatigue." There isn't necessarily superhero fatigue. It's just a different slant on it. Like, just do it a little bit different. Like,
just find something that hooks it in.
And I always think, lean into the time that we're in, because the time that we're in is original. Like, things are going to move on.
Yeah.
And the past is different.
And
this
new
felt...
things become relevant all
Well, exactly.
The time.
So I always think, just... I always say films kind of capture the moment of history that we're going in. But I feel like if you really write that in...
Yeah.
From a, you know, from a queer perspective and all that. But, the director, Emma Seligman, Rachel Sennett now seems to be, like, doing, and there's another one I want to shout out, which who has been like a comedic stalwart within Hollywood for a while, but I do think she's really starting to look for films to produce that have got a little bit.
Are you going to say Elizabeth Banks?
Yes.
Yes.
So I've noticed her as a producer on a few things now.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's had some misses in her, like, in her acting career, but there's been some other good ones. But, like, even just something as stupid as Cocaine Bear.
Honestly.
Like...
She came onto my radar in Pitch Perfect.
Well, I wanted to bring up Pitch
Perfect,
actually,
as well.
Which, I think,
is a ridiculous film, but it's not quite as bizarre as these, as, say, Cocaine Bear and Bottoms. And I think, like... At least my awareness of Elizabeth Banks has gone from Pitch Perfect, which was stupid and funny and all women and just brilliant, then Cocaine Bear, which again was quite a female-centered story, wasn't it, I suppose.
Put it into words, but I keep seeing
Cocaine
her name.
Bear was really, really weird.
Like,
but
crop up on
like
producing credits for things. I'm like, oh. And all of them,
have
whilst they're really different, the dude, I know the dude.
That's what
I
was trying to get at. Yeah. And now this. It's all, you can put them all in the same box and they're not quite, they don't not fit together, even though they're weird and bizarre. I don't know.
I do think this is a fantastic example, as I say, of new voices coming up in Hollywood.
Yes.
And I think we have had some kind of quite, you know, recent interest into, like, Barbie, for God's sake, the top grossing film of this year, which is probably going to stay this way before the year's out. Like, the fact that we got an IP such as Barbie... And they did that with it.
Yeah.
With, like, Greta Gerwig's voice.
Yeah.
It was just
so
phenomenal.
Brilliant.
And I do think as well, it did feel a bit like Pitch Perfect. So there's a character in it that, I mean, it's all quite deadpan, which Pitch Perfect was quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
But there's that character, oh God, what's she
this
called?
Was
what,
like,
Sylvie.
Yeah.
And her love for the violence and that crazy look in her eye. Reminded me of a character as the quiet one in
Was
Pitch Perfect.
Yeah.
Where she whispered.
Lily.
Like, totally different, but that comedic
so
kind of...
funny.
Every time the camera
She's
panned
like the opposite
to her,
end of the same spectrum,
you knew
isn't
that
she?
It was going to be
a
laugh.
You were going to get something tapped.
Yeah. And it was... Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we're putting that kind of framing on this... I would say that Bottoms is like the Gen Z answer to what Pitch Perfect is for millennials.
On paper, maybe.
Yeah.
But the violence in it.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, no, tapped. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely a different type of film. But I think while one had a millennial point of view, the other had a very Gen Z point of view. Is what I was trying to say.
I'm just looking at Elizabeth Banks' IMDb, and she's got shit tons of producing credits coming up.
Really?
White Girl Problems, a woman striving for perfection tries to come to terms with her shopping addiction. Like, I already know.
Mm.
that's going to be very Elizabeth Banks. Like, it's really
weird.
Another
thing about it as well, the soundtrack, I think, really adds that kind of the feeling, this common thread that we've identified with Elizabeth Banks. I think the soundtrack brings it to the fore, and I still can't really put my finger on why.
Well, it's Charlie XCX for a lot of it.
Well, I know.
Who actually was involved, they didn't just use songs of hers. She was involved, she's got a music by credit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does go with it well, especially from a...
It is really good, really
a
good
queer film, with Charlie XCX being very much queer. I don't know if she's queer herself, but she has a massively queer fan base.
I can't confirm nor deny.
What's the song when they're
got icons
egging
there,
and not
she?
Doing it for egging and putting toilet paper on Jeff's house? And they do it really
scene.
Shit, like the pans out and they've got
they're
a little bit of
TP over his like 3-story mansion and they're barely hitting the trees and it's just falling off. So stupid. So stupid.
Was it Complicated by Avril Lavigne?
Yes.
Oh, yes, so yeah, it had. So like classic kind of, I don't even know, because it felt like it was set now. But some
it
of the
could
music.
Could have been set any time between Mean Girls and now.
Yeah, but it had like Complicated by Avril Lavigne, Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler.
It did.
Charlie XCX songs in there, and all of the score was quite like electro, kind of pop. Charlie XCX,
like
vibes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that and there's a really. So. Do they have? No one's got problems with. No parents have got problems with them being lesbians either, have they?
No, it doesn't even. The only parent it mentions is the one that's shagging the jock.
Oh, yeah, she was funny. She was a thirsty cougar.
Hazel's mum.
Yeah. But there's a bit where... Oh, God, 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 God.
Which bit?
So Josie seeks out a character called Rosie, which is a bit random. She just goes off...
Rhodes. Not Rosie.
Rhodes?
As in, like...
Yeah, Rhodes, sorry. Who... She goes off to like this trailer in the middle of nowhere, and it used to be her
honestly that
childhood
entire scene
babysitter.
Felt like an
outtake. Well, I wrote that. There's a bit in the script. No, there's a bit in the scene where Rhodes speaks. So basically, she's like imparting wisdom on Josie, and she speaks, and you can't understand what she's saying. And the way it's delivered, Josie just goes, "I haven't got a clue of anything you've just said." And I would love to ask Emma Seligman.
Was that a lie?
Was that ad lib? Yeah. Because the fact that that got kept in was fantastic.
So well, it I was... did like that scene felt weird, like random.
Yeah.
But it was quite nice to see like young coming of age teenage lesbian going and seeking the advice of a veteran lesbian.
Was she a lesbian?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also moves the plot along because she warns Josie that basically Huntington intends to kill a Rockridge, which we haven't mentioned, but Rockridge is the football team of the school that we're at. One thing before we move on towards the end of it.
Yeah.
One slight drawback, and when we get to star rating, I think there's things that could have potentially been fleshed out a bit better because it is quite a short film.
I can't actually remember what I gave it.
91 minutes, including credits. So it's said that, like, they discuss that they're setting up this fight club to try have sex with girls and be more popular.
Yeah.
That isn't then mentioned, really, until the end.
No, they've got...
That was the one thing that I thought, that point of why they set it up has
PJ
a little bit...
Much...
She was acting it out, which normally I'm like, I'd rather see it, don't tell it.
Yeah.
But just a couple more lines of dialogue along the way, just to kind of hone in that point as to why they've done it. For me...
I think it was in there. I think PJ was very much like, her motivation didn't change until quite late on, after she'd been dished some... quite on-the-nose home truths by Hazel.
Yeah.
And then when Josie didn't stick up for her, she was like, what do you mean? And Josie was like, well, Hazel was kind of speaking the truth there. You've been a bit of a dick, and this is why. What I didn't really get was why that other random jock who isn't Jeff...
Tim?
Is it Tim? I don't know. Don't even care what his name was. He just seemed to have absolutely no reason to have it in for them. Like, he just seemed to hate them and want to see
them. Well, this is what I mean. American High Schools just seem to be like this in films. Like,
brutal.
It would cut to him, like, ringing somebody up on the Yellow Pages, which was weird. And being like,
they fact checked.
They weren't in juvie. Oh, I was like, you've got an iPhone in your hand. Just Google it. But
it was really funny.
It also did a thing. So when they've been warned that they're going to potentially kill someone, the band gets back together. It takes a bit of coercing of. To get them back to join the fight club. Mm. Oh, that was another funny scene, actually, when the cheerleaders come on and they do the most half-assed
cheerleading
basic. But what I found is, like, cheerleaders are held up in such
high regard
in these films, whereas they literally come on, do a little two-step and wave their hands a bit and then everyone claps. Yeah. And I thought, that's a really bit of a clever way to flip it.
Yeah, really
but
funny.
It does a thing in the film. The film does one of those things what we always comment on and like is where something's set up quite early on, which you remember later on. So Jeff and Tim are at the... getting served this food at school.
Yeah.
And... we find out when dinner lady, as I would have called them, I'm sure that's not what they're called in America.
I think lunch lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dinner nanny.
Just thinking of the Simpsons lunch lady Doris.
Has put pineapple on his tray and we find out he's allergic. So we then move fast forward and it's one of those things where it's like, well, that's clearly got a reason because it's in the final take, the final cut, but...
it's a pointless line if it hasn't got a reason.
Yeah. But then later on, they're going to try... The other team are going to try and kill Jeff because they've filled the sprinklers with pineapple juice, which he is allergic to. Yeah. So that gets found out. And then all fucking hell breaks loose. Like,
honestly, this will floor you.
And I know we've been peppered with violence. Well, not more than peppered. Like, we've had a bit of a hit round the head with violence so far in this film.
It's been very much like...
no one's going to die,
it's
but
been
it,
very
it hurts.
Balanced combat. Yeah.
The brawl at the end is way more violent. When
picture
somebody
this.
Actually falls on a sword, the mascot sword,
well, I mean,
and dies.
Massive football players who are psycho running at this group of teenage girls and then...
and brain
they
them.
Have... oh, they have met their match. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, what animal is the mascot?
Is that a lion?
Is it a lion?
Maybe.
Because he's got that sword, which...
in his furry costume.
Which, why? And his costume has the biggest dick.
Oh, I've listened to an interview. Somebody asked, I didn't even notice.
It was huge, how could you not?
It wasn't his costume, it was the point that that was his, the guy underneath his penis.
Oh, that is so
like,
weird.
Just as a bit of a, like, I don't even know. Well, she was like, it's a dick swinging thing, like, look at me.
The funny thing was that his dick was massive. It doesn't matter whether it was costume or the character, it was so funny.
So our group triumph over the football team.
Yeah. And
presumed, like, most of them could be dead.
I think most of them are dead.
Yeah. Which, when I've said towards like the start of our discussions, this is so absurd and over the top.
Yeah.
And actually, talking about Heathers, when we saw Heathers the musical, which I didn't mind, but when I came out of seeing that, I went, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Still did this with this film.
Yeah.
Enjoyed this more than Heathers the musical. I found the tone of Heathers the musical even stranger. But I have said, whilst we have given quite glowing reviews of this film, I don't think it'll be for everyone.
No, don't really.
I think either. if you don't just lie back and just take the tone for what it is,
yeah,
you won't like it.
You have to be able to not
cease
take
your
things
whatever
too
it is, like just
suspend your disbelief.
That's it. Yeah.
Don't take things too seriously, and if you are the type that likes to take things seriously, this probably isn't the film for you. Which is fine.
But just enjoy lesbians on a...
People that like to have a laugh will love this. And I can definitely imagine it being a bit of a stoner film.
Oh, yeah.
Very stoner film vibes. Yeah.
Like, on a... Like, just enjoy as well. It's a comedy. It's being theatrically released. Yeah. It's got two main characters that are lesbians. Loads of other lesbians.
Love it.
And it takes the piss out of men. So...
What's not to love?
Exactly. I also will say... It does one of my favourite things that I've loved since Toy Story 2. It has outtakes in the credits.
Oh, yeah,
and
brilliant.
I fucking love when films do that. It's the I feel like I've sworn a lot this episode.
Fucking love.
But that's me. That's me done.
Yeah. I've said what I need to say.
Star rating?
4 stars.
4 from me.
Yeah.
You could maybe talk me a little bit higher on a good day.
And I think I'm confident in my 4, and it is... A 4 that is very well deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now let's unsheath.
Shit, best go get
the
it.
Lesbian Dar.
The Lesbian Dar.
It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV we discussed based on their LGBTQ+ appeal. Let's see where the gaydar ranks bottoms. Does it come out on top? Or does it fall out the bottom?
Fall out the bottom? Disgusting.
Where are we?
Excuse me.
Surely quite high.
Oh, very high.
Yeah. I can't always remember the ranking that we've got so far, but I've got an idea of...
All right, well, I'll give you the top two are Heartstopper and Sex Education.
Just below them.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to know what it's just beat?
Yeah.
Passages and Red, White and Royal Blue. I know. Difficult one, isn't it?
I'd maybe put it below Passages, potentially. I don't know. I feel like the top of it, I feel like probably this year, and the reasons we've discussed that Sex Education and Heartstopper are so high is they literally show all of the Rainbow Mafia, the full shebang.
Yeah.
I feel like under them, I feel like we're going to be in much of a...
Well,
like,
I do kind of
tier.
Think our third position, I think, is a three-way tie between Bottoms, Passages and Red, White and Royal Blue, to be honest. Because after that's
interesting
Barbie.
That Bottoms and Red, White and Royal Blue are so close together when it's got the same person in it.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of have equal representation of a different letter and...
No, I think what we probably need to think about and what the gaydar needs to maybe think about when it spits out these things.
Well, all this work we're doing here is to calibrate the gaydar.
Oh, so it's an AI.
Well, I wouldn't quite...
Basically.
No.
That was what was in Mission Impossible, was
it? It's not machine learning. It's calibration.
But I think you maybe just got to look at the different things, because one thing, I mean, I know this segment is a bit in jest and it's to do with our podcast.
Too deep into
no,
this.
But what
We've
I know, what I will say is, like, we know that the LGBTQ+ perspective is not unipolar, whatever, however you say that.
Unipolar.
I don't know. It's not like
we're not a homogenous mass.
That's the thing. Yes.
Unlike straight people.
Yes.
That was a joke.
So, you know, I think. We actually went with a group of people, two of which were lesbians, but at the end I didn't get to ask them if they enjoyed it, and I didn't want to be like, oh, you were the lesbian, tell me what you thought, but I would like, when I next see them, to see actually talk to them about it.
After they've had time to reflect on it.
Because I, like, loved Passages, but that was from a gay, male, cisgender
perspective. I don't even know why we're talking about Passages right now, because the two are so incomparable.
Because that's what we're meant to do in this segment.
I know it is, but these two are so incomparable. I'd be more likely to talk about it in comparison to Red, White and Royal Blue.
I mean, even that's a bit of a stretch.
Because they're both, like, stupid.
At least the comedies.
They're both comedies.
Very different comedies.
Camp.
Yeah. But yes.
Yep. Do we have anything else to say about it?
No.
Where can people watch it? Still in the cinemas?
Still in the cinemas. And I would seek it out if you could when you're listening. I mean, the whole point of this podcast is you have to have pretty much seen it because we've just spoiled the full film for you. But...
where's it likely, where's it likely to end up streaming?
Well, it was Warner's, wasn't it? Which I was shocked at when the Warner Brothers thing came up. Yeah, I was like, oh, they're putting out a... The film was released in the US and Canada on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, maybe we'll get it on Amazon Prime.
In September.
Right.
So I think it's maybe rolling out across... I don't think it'll be in cinemas for long.
No.
At all.
No, it's not going to
if it's not on
the big screen.
If it's still there. But there was quite a few people in there, and I love...
Did you notice that couple leave 20
minutes
in? Yeah,
I did. I was like, oh, God. But what I do like, my two favourite genres to watch in a screen that's got plenty of people in, horror and comedy.
Yeah.
And we were all laughing along and having fun. So, yeah.
Love that.
Yes.
Hey, well, that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate and comment on your podcast platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at Gaze on Film Pod. And you can check out our Letterboxd accounts. The links to those are in the show notes. We would love to hear your thoughts, so please do feel free to drop us a message. I have been Ned.
And I have been Declan.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.